This is an ABC podcast.
It's foggy and refreshing this morning. Morning!
Morning!
So the story goes, the founder of Patagonia, the outdoor gear company, Yvon Chouinard, well, he wanted to build a company around his passion for climbing and the great outdoors, and he wanted to encourage all his employees and staff to do the same. However, if they were climbing and hiking and skiing, he did have a dilemma. How could he keep his employees engaged, connected and informed if they're all out and about? So he came up with quite an ingenious report at the time. It was a paper-based report. It would take each employee 15 minutes to fill out once a week, then it would all roll up through management and then be collected and compiled, and he would spend 5 minutes reading it. This report was a huge success for him in terms of staff morale increasing, engagement increasing. So one Australian company, which is quite new, has decided to adopt this approach, but of course in this day and age they're using an app called 15.5, and so we're going to find out a little bit more about how they use this app and a little bit more about this Australian company. I'm Lisa Leong. Welcome to This Working Life. So I'm approaching the front of a building. I see the words Brand Collective, and there is the cutest dog staring at me. Knock, knock. Inside, I could hear chatting, laughing. I saw dogs, but more on that later. Brand Collective is a spin-off from the parent company Pacific Brands, a huge company that owns some of Australia's best-known underwear, socks and bedding brands. 5 years ago, Pacific Brands handed one of its employees a golden opportunity. His name is Martin Matthews, and he was running Brand Collective, the footwear and sport portfolio within Pacific Brands. Hello, Martin. Lisa Leong.
Good to see you, Lisa.
Martin was full of ideas and keen to change some of the practices and culture in the division. Things he thought might be holding the company back from achieving an even greater potential.
I think I just eventually concluded the only way I could get away with doing what I wanted to do was actually being the boss. So it just sort of, I kept following the opportunities until we ended up here.
So how did that happen? How did he become the CEO of Brand Collective?
So we presented a strategy to the Pacific Brands board for this business unit, which involved transforming the culture and the business to being a retail business. We felt that we were sort of 10 years behind the rest of the market in that. And they thought it was a good strategy, but they didn't want to fund it. So they said to me, look, if you can find someone to fund that strategy, then you can have the business. So we found a private equity backer and we carved out the business unit, and that was almost 5 years ago now.
Brand Collective, an entirely independent company, was born. Martin had a blank canvas and wasted no time in making 3 major changes. Change number 1, an overhaul of the decision-making process. Out with red tape.
I remember when I first arrived at Pacific Brands, we called a meeting to get the Hush Puppies team together, and 25 people turned up, and none of those people worked solely on Hush Puppies. So you'd have head of sales, a head of product, a head of marketing, but they'd be working on 5 to 6 brands each, and then they'd all come together to meet and talk about this 1/5 of their attention. Incredibly complicated, right? Incredibly hard to actually get anything done that way. So that's probably the biggest shift structurally, which led to the cultural changes that followed. So now we tend to be structured around each of our operating brands, and the brand managers for those groups largely have autonomy over strategy and all of their operational decisions. So it really sort of shifted the decision-making down the organisation to those smaller groups.
And why would you do that?
For speed, mainly speed, and also closeness to the customer. We've got a really diverse portfolio.
That portfolio includes streetwear for younger consumers, socks, fashionable shoes and comfort footwear for an older age group.
Can you imagine operating those businesses under one structure and one set of leadership? It's a very different customer. And so by pulling that apart, we're able to get people a lot closer to their customer base. They build their brand teams, can have the culture that fits their brand and their customer rather than a sort of a one-size-fits-all culture.
So this idea of speed, why is that so important in your market?
As everybody knows, retail's changed incredibly quickly. You've got online playing a much bigger role. You've got international brands entering the Australian market. Consumers have a very clear idea what they want to buy, and if you're not providing that, you're not going to have a very successful business.
Like Martin told me that 10 years ago, the industry only needed to advertise a small number of new products once every 6 months. Now, every season, about 80% of the stock is new, and it's advertised using both traditional methods in mainstream media and outdoors, as well as social media, websites and emails. New products are released weekly.
Now the experience curve is incredibly short. You know, something that might work 1 year probably won't work the next year. So you'll need a completely different strategy, a different skill set, a different approach. And if you can't pivot quickly, you're very irrelevant and you find yourself in a declining business.
But not everyone in the organisation was on board with the fast pace of change. And those who struggled left. Winston, hello. Change number two. Martin told his staff the shackles were off. It was time to develop a new culture and create a workplace where people could be themselves. And yes, that's where the dogs come in.
You know, the idea for the dogs in the office, it was such an anathema to the way the company was run previously that it was quite, you know, they would have never let us do that. So it was kind of a way of saying, well, we're free now, we're independent, and we're going to do what we want to do. So we're going to bring the dogs into the office. And, you know, the knock-on impact of that in terms of just people engaging with each other on a much more human level rather than, you know, you come in with your job title and all of that. You know, when you see a dog, it strikes up a whole different conversation, which just wasn't happening before.
So when can people take their dogs in?
Whenever they like.
That's Claire Sieber, the General Manager of HR.
Yeah, we have some days where we've got anywhere, you know, up to five or six dogs here some days. But we've got big dogs, small dogs, sausage dogs, Dalmatians, Dobermans, Greyhounds, all sorts here. So it's really good. Definitely brings people together.
Do you have a dog?
I do have a dog. I have a little sausage dog called Kransky. He sometimes makes his way here, but this is Snickers. Hey, Snickers, say hi.
Hello, Snickers. I'm Lisa. Hello. Hello, beautiful. Snickers is saying hello. Snickers is a pug, and her owner, Amelia, brings her in at least once a fortnight.
Just whenever I need to, or whenever she, like, looks at me and is like, can I come to work? She loves it here. She gets heaps of attention, so it's nice to have her in the office.
What does it mean to you to bring Snickers in?
Oh, like, it's good. Like, I don't have to leave her at home and I don't need to worry. And, like, it's nice to have her here. It's calming and, yeah.
Does it ever get too crazy?
No, not yet.
She seems really well behaved and gorgeous, even though she's actually gone around my legs.
So.
And it's actually a very long lead that you've got her on. So do people just let their dogs wander, or are they generally on a lead?
Just depends. Like, I let her run around for a bit, but I make sure she comes back. But yeah, she likes to explore and get to as many people as she can.
Well, Snickers, you're absolutely gorgeous. Thanks for giving me a lick before. Martin, as you may have guessed, has a dog too. It's Winston, a big, golden, fluff ball of a retriever.
Very food-oriented, and even though he's five, he still thinks he's a puppy. Yeah, he's just made a beeline for the people on this floor that he knows have food.
But of course, not everyone is a dog person, so I asked Martin, what happened to those people?
That's a good question. We had a couple of people that just didn't understand it. And some of those people probably aren't here. But we do have people in the office that aren't really dog people. But I think, you know, there's a healthy level of respect around how the dogs behave in the office. And we've had a couple of incidents and a couple of accidents. But I mean, it's amazing. When you give people freedom, they take responsibility. We also take the view that you can't always manage for the minority. If you always stop yourself from doing things because a small amount of people might prefer you didn't, you won't do very much at all. So we just took the view that it was positive overall. And it consistently is one of the most positive things we see on our culture surveys.
And that brings us to change number three. That app I mentioned right at the start of the program, it's called 15-5. It was part of a strategy to improve communications between managers and staff, replacing traditional annual performance reviews with a weekly pulse check. Martin talked about it once we'd walked upstairs to his desk in the Open Plan office. I'd like to point out that we did leave Winston downstairs. As the CEO, what are you seeing when you open that app?
Well, the biggest thing is you're just seeing so much more than you normally would, because if you think, as a CEO, normally everything you hear is fed up through your direct reports, right? Filtered heavily, of course, you know, like you're not necessarily going to get the truth. But because all of this is now documented on a weekly basis, I can see everybody's feedback at any time. So you get a much better sense of what's happening at the coalface of the company. And it just makes decision making so much faster. It gives me a much better pulse of actually what's going on the ground.
Martin, is that your dog?
Yes, that's Winston following us around.
How did he get up here?
Looking for more food. He has learnt how to operate the lift, I'm sure.
It's incredible. What would happen if you didn't have this app, Martin?
It's been a huge driver of cultural change. But now that change has happened, my feeling is if we took it away tomorrow, not much would change in the short term, because I think we now have that rhythm of managers asking their people how they feel, and I think that communication would still happen for a period of time. My fear would be, first thing, I would lose the visibility, so that immediately I wouldn't be able to see all those conversations happening and be able to act on things as quickly. And in the long run, I think it would allow, in parts of the organisation, that culture to start to slip. So I think that, then there's a risk that people do lose motivation over time, and they also don't have frequent feedback. So, that they don't develop as quickly, they don't identify, areas for improvement as quickly. And so all of those things, they're very hard to measure, but they're incredibly important.
Dylan Cooper was one of the people who supported bringing the app to the business.
I really love it.
He's an HR coordinator and explained how it works and the types of questions people are asked.
To start off with, we've got a really nice scale that's how do you feel at work? So we've got from awful at 1 all the way through to amazing at 5.
And there's room for people to elaborate on their answers in a comments section. Have you ever put awful, Dylan?
I have probably, I've been at 2 at one point, and that was actually probably a tough one to do as myself, but it was actually a really good way to communicate with my manager how I was feeling at work this week, and for him to kind of reach out to me without having to feel awkward or for me to kind of broach that topic straight away. So it helps a lot with confidence in terms of getting that conversation out there and getting that conversation started.
People don't feel like there's any ramifications of putting a bad number there?
Not at all. So we really encourage everyone to be honest, I think, around this company.
Some of the other questions include, what went well this week? What was your biggest challenge this week? And people are given room to list their goals for the coming week. And everyone is invited to high-five a colleague through the app to thank them for their help and acknowledge a job well done. For Dylan, the app has given him a greater understanding of everyone else's roles in the business, which has made him feel more connected with his colleagues. I saw one of your goals for this week was speaking to us on This Working Life at ABCRN, so I'd like to say congratulations on achieving that goal. I'd like to see you tick that off right now.
Thank you very much. I can definitely tick that off.
And high five.
Oh, high fives all around.
Take it down. From a happy workplace at Brand Collective to unhappy workplaces, there's a meme going around saying people don't leave jobs, they leave toxic work cultures. But what is a toxic work culture? Why does it happen? And what can be done to fix it? Anna Panuzzo is the director and founder at Workplace Plus, an HR consultancy, and she's had plenty of experience helping organisations deal with toxic work cultures. Welcome, Anna.
Hi, Lisa.
What is a toxic workplace?
A toxic workplace is a workplace where it seems to have a lack of appropriate leadership, poor communication, poor working relationships, poor team relationships, staff conflict, people not getting enough support, people not understanding the policies and procedures, not aligning their conduct with the values and missions of the organisations.
How do I tell if the work culture is toxic, though?
It generally has things like there's a lot of gossip. People aren't talking to the leadership or the management or their supervisor about issues and having those courageous conversations about their concerns. They're having chats in the coffee shop or chats in the staff room, or not being supportive when a team member asks them a question, or when there's a grievance or a concern, when they're putting it up, the leadership is not following it up or not providing support or guidance.
Many people would say a lot of workplaces have elements of that. How do you know when it's turned toxic?
The significant sign is that they're not dealing with issues. So a bullying and harassment complaint, a grievance, or there's a high absenteeism or a high turnover of staff.
Let's tease it out a bit more then. What are some of the impacts that you see in the work that you do of toxic work environments on, say, staff, the workers?
A lot of it is it has an impact on people's well-being and health, has an impact of wanting to move, and even to the point where, unfortunately, in organisations, they don't even trust the HR area at sometimes because they're not seen as neutral.
Is it hard to tell when you're in it, Anna?
Sometimes it is, yes. But the test for yourself is how happy you are. Do you want to go to work? Are you satisfied with what you're doing? Or is it a matter of, I don't like this workplace anymore, I can't get anywhere, I try to constantly get some issues resolved, no one wants to hear me?
Is it things like starting to lose sleep?
Yes, starting to lose sleep, not being able to eat. Even some people report that they have to go to the doctor and they might feel anxious. Yes, your well-being is impacted.
What's the role of HR here? Because I think commonly people may hesitate to approach HR. Why is that?
HR should be seen as a neutral consultant within the organisation who works both for the employer and the employee. For the employer, it will talk about the risks, provide them advice, tell them what their legal or jurisdictional obligations are. For the employee, the same. Have you considered this? Support them in having those courageous conversations with the employer, but also understanding what their obligations are within their policies and procedures.
And in your experience, practically speaking, what do you think actually happens with HR?
It doesn't always happen that way.
In what way does it happen?
Well, so what happens with HR is sometimes they're stifled by what they can do and they're following the policies and procedures and they're not given the directional support themselves as HR practitioners to be able to lead themselves.
So aligning more with the employer.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. And that can be a problem for the HR team.
What would the worker do then?
The worker could go external. First of all, before going external, would make sure that they've worked through all the policies and procedures. So they could go to the supervisor, HR, the CEO, even the board they could go to if they needed to. There will generally be a good grievance policies and procedures that they could apply that process or go externally.
It's pretty daunting.
It is.
So how do you get over that, not wanting to be the noisy, squeaking wheel, the person who's always complaining?
It's having those courageous conversations. I really do believe that any employee needs to be able to have that courageous conversation. It's a bit like a broken record. You need to keep doing it if you really want to stay with the organisation.
So is record keeping important then, making sure you're going back to the data, what has actually happened?
It is the most important thing. Without the data and without the evidence in terms of what's happened, the context it's happened in, gathering that information, if you haven't got that, you won't be able to substantiate your issues. And it does happen a lot. Employees do keep data and file notes of what's occurred to them, any conversations they've had, any issues that have occurred with them in the employment period. So I always advise supervisors and managers, if you're managing staff, you should document what your discussions are, what you're doing with your staff on a daily basis.
We're talking about toxic workplaces with Anna Panuzzo. She's principal and HR consultant at Workplace Plus. This is Lisa Leong for This Working Life. At what point should I leave, Anna?
That's a hard one. It's an individual choice. I would say if it's having a huge impact on your well-being and your health, and you don't feel like there's anywhere else to go, yes, that's the point. And if that's where you've tried every avenue to change and even tried to look at other things that you could do, I think at that point it's your well-being that you might consider leaving.
I feel like I've met a few people who may have stayed for too long and the thing they give up is their health and well-being. Have you had that in your experience as well?
Yes, I have. A lot of them turn out to be, unfortunately, go on to a work cover claim or a long-term stress claim or a long-term grievance, yes. And sometimes those only get resolved with a negotiated agreement where they resolve issues.
And so what would you advise to make sure that you haven't gone too far?
Yeah. My advice is to really try and have, again, those courageous conversations with the supervisor and really table that it isn't working for you. Do they have strategies to assist? If not, is there somewhere or something else we need to consider?
Okay, so we've burrowed into the worker's perspective. I want to talk about the perspective of leadership.
Yep.
If it comes to my attention that actually this workplace is forming a toxic work culture and it's not working well, what should I do at that level, a leader?
You could possibly do a cultural review or look at what is happening with your organisation to try and find out what are some of the hot spots, what are some of the issues for the staff, and have someone externally or even internally do a interview of staff and find out how they're feeling and what's happening for them. A number of organisations do what they call surveys every 2 years and to find out what is their culture like, what's happening for them. So that's a really good tool as a leader.
How honest are people?
Generally, they are honest, but I do understand that at some point some people feel hesitant. But again, that is a sign of your culture if people are hesitant to respond. So the aim is if the leadership is trying to get information, they are really trying to find out what is it that their culture is missing.
Do you have an example of a company that you've worked with that has managed to change a toxic work culture into one which was, you know, more positive?
Probably there are a few, but it takes a few years. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes a lot of communication, a lot of support, a lot of discussion, a lot of continually reinforcing that it is open communication, there's transparent, there's leadership, there's no hidden agendas, and that staff will be supported. And what you'll find is that a number of key players may move on and leave organisations.
So let's then look at why we would bother as a business to change the culture, because maybe a culture of fear, people may think that that leads to results, but let's have a look at that. And let's maybe myth bust that, Anna.
What you find is in a toxic workplace culture, people are not there. They're not productive. They're not performing at the level that I think a positive workplace is. They're not working as a team. The positive workplace culture is you get a greater retention of staff and loyalty. There's lots of organisations who have fantastic cultures and you see people just come in every day very happy, want to be there, and there's no ongoing turnover.
What about legal obligations?
Well, there's the Occupational Health and Safety Act. As an organisation, you do have a duty of care to your employees. And even under the Fair Work Act, there is an obligation that an employer is required to make sure that there's a safe workplace.
Ah, you're convincing me now, Anna. No, absolutely. Let's look at the role of performance management now. How can we use performance management?
So if there's poor performance at any point, you need to deal with it immediately and appropriately. So if you see inappropriate discussion or inappropriate gossiping or inappropriate conduct, you need to call it. You shouldn't just leave it.
So that we're clear, what are the key parts of performance management?
Making sure clear of the issue. So what was the issue that occurred? When did it occur? And also talking about what the breach is. So whether it's an inappropriate conduct or inappropriate breach of a policy, what are the concerns and what's the expected behaviour?
Anna Panuzzo, thank you for taking us through toxic workplaces and what we can do to address them.
Thank you.
Anna Panuzzo is the director and founder of Workplace Plus, an HR consultancy. And that brings us to the end of the program. If you want to hear any of our episodes again or share our stories, you can download our podcast from the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcast from. Thanks to producer Verica Jokic. I'm Lisa Leong, and until next week, keep working.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.